Hello and welcome to this episode of People at Work. It's Dustin. I'll be your host today. So on today's episode, I'm chatting with Darren Winterford, who is the CEO and founder of EdApp. We're going to be chatting a little bit about building a culture of learning, how that's changed with COVID and everything else crazy going on in the world, and helping to change the way the world learns at work. Darren, welcome to People at Work.
Yeah, thanks very much, Justin.
So I think before we dive in about, you know, what sparked the idea for EdApp and hearing your founder story, which is always interesting, maybe do you want to give us the elevator pitch so our listeners know what it is that you do?
Sure, yes. EdApp is a workplace learning tool that enables workplaces to roll out really engaging learning in very small bite-sized pieces, you know, 4 or 5 minutes, directly out to their mobile device, you know, via a mobile app platform primarily. So take your existing thinking around e-learning and 90 minutes long and clicking in front of a computer screen to, you know, make your way through somewhat arduous e-learning, and think about that being delivered in very small morsels out to a mobile device that's highly engaging and that has some smarts to it. So you're able to get the key learning out to people in your distributed teams around the world, in a really seamless and modern way.
Very cool. Yeah, I like the bite-sized approach, especially because it can be hard to sit through, you know, the same intro in the video and clicking through 20 different lessons. And yeah.
Yeah, you got it. You got it. And it's something we see very high levels of engagement when we're able to, you know, build that trust between the organization and the team member that, hey, we'd like to take 5 to 10 minutes of your day. Maybe it's, you know, a maximum of even 20 minutes, you know, over a fortnight, in 3 or 4 small sessions. You know, like there is in consumer apps, people are very comfortable with receiving a push notification that says, hey, can we quickly grab 3 minutes just to run a refresher on that sales training, or run a refresher on that product training, or let me just provide you with some new information about your role and how to be a better leader, for example.
Yeah, no, that makes a lot of sense. And how, like, what sparked that for you? What was kind of the impetus of founding it?
We could see that e-learning is really broken, and the world is, and COVID has accelerated that, of course. The world is becoming, you know, increasingly deskless. We've got distributed teams all over the world in large companies. It's not a matter of sitting in a classroom anymore. You know, that was already, if you like, on the way out. And then something like COVID has just accelerated that change, that all of a sudden, okay, well, I'm sitting here, I'm running a huge retail operation, or I'm running a large, you know, manufacturing facility, or, you know, a huge car brand. And I might have, you know, 50 people in a team, or I might have 50,000. And I need to have a way, when all these people aren't going to be in the center, or I'm not going to be able to put them in a classroom, we need a way to be able to really effectively roll out learning that is going to, you know, help these people be better at their jobs every day. And we could see that the traditional approach to e-learning just wasn't cutting it. And certainly with the advent of, you know, the smartphone and its impact in the workplace, once we could see that it was going to be, you know, acceptable for people to be able to use their smartphone and sometimes even their personal smartphones at work, it seemed to us the logical platform for us to be able to really try and rejuvenate the industry. E-learning really suffers from, you know, it has terrible NPS scores. Most people would refer to their, what they would call their LMS, as clunky or terrible. You don't often hear, oh, I love our learning platform. That's something that we set out to change.
Yeah, that's awesome. I think a lot of companies struggle with that, almost like a growth mindset or continuous learning, and, you know, instilling that and making it available. And maybe it is because it can be a bit of an ordeal. Like, I have to create this giant course or bring in a guest speaker. And yeah,
100%. Those blockers are definitely there. You just identified one, which is the actual content creation process. Already is, you know, traditionally has been much too hard. And so our platform looks, we have sort of a no code authoring tool that people can just upload their video. They can ask questions very easily. We've got a number of games and simulations, and I think there's about 90 to 100 different templates that people can just drag and drop and make these small micro lessons. And so all of a sudden, as you said, this content production piece is now so easy. It takes 15 minutes. I can put together a lesson. I can, you know, assign it to the right user group, press send, and, you know, simultaneously push notifications on, hey, here's all you need to know about this new product, for example. And so that's one of the pain points for sure that we've solved is the content production process.
Nice. And then like part of that with companies is building that culture of learning. And for some, it might be a big change, right? So,
yeah.
I mean, obviously but using this product is one, but any other tips on how people might navigate that?
Yeah, I think we see the largest levels of success where we have a really strong advocate within the HR function, even if it's a HR department of one, as we sometimes call them. When you've got someone in that function that is really keen on building a continuous culture of learning, and they are able to find a sponsor within the organization that means that they've got the financial ability, but they've also got the ability to be able to roll out something like that through an organization. And there you've got, you know, we always find that one of the drivers can be anyone that's has teams in the field, whether they be sales operations, retail operations, or, you know, in charge of people on, you know, the factory floor, for example. We tend to find that those people are really committed to excellence. They're committed to anything that helps their teams do better, whether it's selling, whether it's being safer, whether it's, you know, being more efficient. And if you're able to find those particular advocates, you know, that are going to be using the product and are interested in making their teams better and higher quality and more efficient, then to us, that always seems like it results in a really powerful rollout and a tool that's going to be used, you know, for many years within an organization. So I think it's got to come from a strong advocate within HR, and then finding those stakeholders that, you know, will actually use the tool and have that sort of level of support for it that will enable its then rollout through the complete organization.
Nice. And I think, I mean, this probably vary a little bit industry to industry, but what are some of the, you know, major turning points or benefits that customers have seen by approaching it a little bit differently than the traditional way?
Yeah, I think if we're talking about, it's such a broad field, but let's say we start with sales. It's something I think that in learning we don't talk about enough. And the reason I say that is because there is an instant return that's very measurable. And therefore, I think it's a target group. If you are, you know, currently in an L&D position or in HR, and you're thinking about rolling out and, you know, really trying to revitalize your learning culture, then I think it's a good group to start with because there's an immediate financial return. And, you know, that really does help then, as I say, the rollout through an entire company. But we do see, for example, sales training being highly effective. And, you know, there is constantly elements there that you know, sales and their leaders need to, you know, talk quite consistently. They're constantly coming up against obstacles. So therefore, there's constant education required and there's, you know, areas to be navigated. And so that's where we see a lot of initial success for sure in that segment. And there, as I say, you can be talking about functional learning and you can be talking about actual product. And again, you start talking about, say, a continuous learning program that might start with 1 month, and that 1 month might again be something that you might be looking at, you know, 4 or 5 interventions over that month. We have a gamified platform, so you can use leaderboards and gamification, which again really, really talks to the sales audience.
For sure.
That's something again that, you know, they're keen on competition, and that for us normally is a good place to start. And then we can start to look at, okay, let's look at leadership and how we get our leaders to be, you know, much better at their jobs and create better environments and higher quality teams and make this an organization that people want to work at. And then we might go and start looking at, okay, what are some of the specifics around the organization that might also be applicable? So, you know, finance for non-finance managers and some of the softer skills, for example, that you can apply more broadly across the organization. But I do think that the softer skills, I would think, are not the place to start, only because it is very broad and it's a little bit intangible. You're much better off looking for that that feedback you're going to be able to get more directly from line managers who are going to say, oh, you know, this is amazing. And it's really helped me deliver X project, you know, X dollars through the door, anything like that. So my advice would be look for where it can be tangible early. You know, like the first 90 days of a presidency, you want to get those runs quickly. And that's going to really help you set up maybe to be able to then have further resources allocated to the project, et cetera, to then, you know, really be able to have an impact.
Yeah, no, I think that makes a ton of sense. I started out in sales many, many, many years ago, and we had the more traditional, you know, someone from Sandler comes in for 3 days.
Yeah.
And we sit there and go through it, and then we don't really hear anything for a year. And
yeah,
sales, you're right. It is that repetition where you just have to get used to saying the right things, doing the right things, and learning. So that makes sense.
And it's just, yeah. And there's just so much there, and it evolves so quickly. Yeah. And when you've got evolving content, it's also dynamic. It feels dynamic. Your users will be heavily engaged. And I think it just sets you up perfectly for being able to then have a look at across an entire organization. But of course, there are some organizations that don't have sales teams. They might be focusing on quality and some other metrics. But it is all about, I think, getting those early metrics in, getting that momentum, and then being able to say, okay, you know, I can now apply this vision across the entire organization. I just think in our experience, that's where we've seen rolling out a continuous learning culture be successful.
Yeah, it's that snowball thing of building on it for sure. And so with, you know, the pandemic hasn't affected every company or person in some type of way. I imagine how your users use the platform as well might have shifted a bit. Have you noticed any, you know, different usage patterns or?
Yeah, I mean, we saw obviously other than a massive shift into digital.
Yeah.
What has been interesting is we were something probably like 80% consumed on a mobile device pre-pandemic. And what's interesting is during the, you know, in Europe and North America, during the height of the outbreak, we saw then a return to laptop screens.
Yep.
You know, as people were outside less, they were doing less, if you like, they were in front of their computer screens for a greater period of the day. So we did see a slight return to the desktop screen, and we had to make sure that amongst our users who are producing content, that it wasn't a return to, oh, I've got them for a little bit longer here. Let me see if I can eke out half an hour of their day. Because what we tend to find is as soon as that trust is broken, it, you know, that message goes off that you've got something that, you know, a manager or a leader would like you to do. If again, the feeling of dread returns that, oh, how long is this going to take? Then, you know, you get moved to the 1 day pile, and that 1 day never seems to come. So we did have to really still focus on, you know, short form micro learning, which we were able to do. And as Europe and North America have opened back up, and as Australia will now, we've instantly seen, you know, that return back to the mobile screen as people return to somewhat working normally.
So even with our podcast and my personal podcast listening habits, kind of same thing. I would do that learning and listening on my commute, right, on in the car when I'm driving, or on the bus, or, you know, waiting in line for something on my mobile phone. So yeah, I could definitely see that shift. I like how you talked about, you know, having to keep the trust that this isn't a traditional L&D initiative, and it's not going to be hour long lessons that you're forced to do. How did you manage to do that? Was it coaching the people individually, building things into the platform?
Yeah, so we do, everything in the platform is designed to be short form. So one feature we often are asked for is the ability for a learner to be able to pause. Mm-hmm. And we've never put it in on purpose, because we want the interactions and the intervention should be so short that it doesn't matter if I put my phone down for, you know, 20 seconds while I do something else, if my phone goes off or something. We want to make sure that it's, you know, we, in our training material that either we'll run using the platform, or, you know, online, people can watch multiple webinars about how to use EdApp effectively. Mm-hmm. You will see that all of the training and all of the guidelines are on, hey, let's have no more than 13 or 14 slides, as we call them, if you think about them like that.
Yep.
Let's make sure video is cut down. Let's make sure it's all short form learning. And we have a content library that's public that people can drag into their account, if you like, and edit and then republish.
Okay.
And everything in that content library is in short form. So it naturally says to an author and content producers, this is the format in which, you know, you need to match. Sometimes we do have to talk with organizations, that might come back with, you know, hey, we'd love to roll out a 35-minute lesson, or we sometimes get requests for, we'd love to roll out an assessment that's 180 multiple choice questions.
Yeah.
And we have to go back and educate on where we see great results when people use EdApp, and it tends to not be in that sort of long form.
Yeah. No, nice. I like how it's built into the product. I think that's key, especially as you scale. You can't be having those one-to-one conversations necessarily with everyone to coach them. So.
Yeah, absolutely. And we're a freemium product. So we, there's a lot of people that take our tool and they can use it for free. So if you've got a small team, we have thousands literally of teams, around the world using it, and they might own a series of restaurants. They might own a, concreting business. And again, because the tool is, you know, it's no code, it allows you to just very quickly grab content that exists, that's been rated and reviewed, and quickly edit, apply their own logo, apply their own video, add their own sort of personal questions and deploy. You do find that there is a user base that we can't talk to, as you say, one-to-one. Mm-hmm. And so it really baked into the tool that, yeah, this is something as soon as I am familiar with how this works, and it's quite intuitive, and it feels a lot like a very typical content creation process, like a PowerPoint or something very similar, Canva. And then they're able to roll that out really quickly without any assistance at all.
Nice. And then jumping onto that free topic a little bit, it seems like, you know, it's a business, obviously there are other components to it, but a big part of it does seem to be able to help and enable people with this. And especially I think it was the Educate All initiative that you had on the website and a few other things. I'd love if you could maybe explain that. I found that super interesting. So
yeah, sure. So one of the things that we saw in the corporate space was, because they do have a larger L&D team, they have the capacity to put together great content.
Mm-hmm.
And in dealing with all these really large corporate entities, particularly in North America, we could see the fantastic material that they have, if you like, behind the corporate, you know, veil. If you're an employee of that company, you've got access to it. But everyone else, you know, it's just to make, you know, leaders at, you know, Toyota or at Honda or Mercedes-Benz more, you know, better leaders. And it's the IP of that company, but it's so underutilized. And that could really be effective if we were able to deploy that out to, you know, other people around the world, and maybe even those people that aren't lucky enough to be employed. And that thinking led us to this Educate All initiative. The United Nations were actually using our product, and they were using it to educate their cohorts in Iraq, in Afghanistan, in Somalia, in Northern Africa. And we could see also that they had a similar level of skill and fantastic material, that their material might be, again, around leadership or entrepreneurship and trying to rebuild war-torn societies and the role of females in society and all of this great content, but again, was only available to people that were going through UN programs.
Yeah.
And so we went to our client base and said, look, this is a platform that teams of any size can use for free. It's only if you want the enterprise-grade features that you will pay for EdApp. And given that, we would be prepared to enable people to not only use our platform for free, but also use all of our content for free that we already had in a public library. And we went to the UN, we went to our clients and said, do you have content that for, you know, almost the good of the world, would you be prepared to put that into a public area within our public library that anyone that downloads EdApp to either train their team would be able to use?
Yep.
Or if anyone wants to that is not employed and would just like to download the mobile app like they would be if they were a learner at an organization, and from there they could also access the public library and therefore take the same courseware and help, you know, them better themselves and maybe, you know, hopefully find employment or find a way to help advance their society or their village or whatever it may be. And we got a great reaction to it. And so we were able to now, if you go into our public library, you'll see all of the courseware from the UN and some of their partners like UNESCO, UNITAR, and others. We've got a lot coming in the coming weeks around UN Women. So lots of courseware there on suitable for women around the world. But also we've seen really big clients, Deloitte, Marley Spoon, and others putting courseware in that library that small teams can use, as I say, individuals can use, and they can use it from, you know, all over the world.
That's awesome. I love how that's like democratizing it a little bit and getting to people who would never really have that opportunity, which it's got to feel good as an entrepreneur to be able to do that and give back a little bit.
Right? Yeah. And it makes the teams that work on the product, you know, they're really excited by the initiative. And you know, it grows month on month. It's not something that is heavily metricized in the business, if you like. It's something that we do, you know, philanthropically, but we do keep an eye on, you know, the thousands of people that are using it. And they're using it individually, but also, you know, just the humble small team with a passionate leader that wants to provide an opportunity for their team members to grow and to learn. It's great to see, say, for example, Pernod Ricard, one of the world's largest spirits company, if not the biggest. They have put some content in there that's really suitable for bar owners and for people running bars. And, you know, commercially, Pernod have a role to play in that space. But traditionally, that information wouldn't flow down to someone that might be, you know, setting up a small bar in Chile and wants to, you know, be able to roll out, hey, here's what great customer service looks like. And here's a different way to think about approaching, you know, people in our establishment. So, and it just generates such momentum. The more content we have in there, the more other people want to contribute, mm-hmm. and the more our content library fills out. And I think now, you know, we're approaching something like 900 courses, and the majority of them, all of them are free. And the majority of them are editable. So it means that you can drag it in and then say, all right, I know this, I want to make this relevant to my town, to my bar, to my team. And you're able to, as I say, you know, edit logos, put in your own video, the whole thing is editable. So it really gives you a nice scaffold in which to start.
Nice. Yeah. I think giving that head start, one, it saves time and makes the content creation easier. And two, they just might not know where to start, right? Like you have this million-dollar teams at large companies that do this for a living. So being able to trickle that down, I think, is super, super helpful.
Mm-hmm.
Cool. And I think that's a great, you know, segue into if our listeners do want to learn more, check out the app, learn more about you, like where can they go to find out all of that?
Yeah, no, so it's edapp.com, so edapp.com. As I say, anyone is able to go in there and start an account. There's no credit cards or any of that nastiness. It literally is just, you know, jump in there and sign up.
Yep.
And then they can, use the tool, as long as they like for teams of any size. You can invite 2000 people into your account and, you're able to author content. And as I say, you're also able to use our content library. But that's a really good way to get started. We are always hosting webinars and things. You'll find all that information on our site. There's also a whole bunch of material on YouTube. And then even at the end of this month, I'll be speaking in Las Vegas at the Safety Culture Summit, where we have a lot of CEOs from around the world, some of whom are leading, you know, large organizations. I think we've got the Surgeon General of the US Army. We have Magic Johnson, the famous LA Lakers point guard, speaking. And I'll actually be interviewing some customers and some users from the United States and other areas on how they use the platform to inspire their teams, you know, in I guess, build that continuous culture of learning that we talked about.
Yeah.
And that's, you know, that's free to attend or to sign into virtually.
Awesome. Cool. I'll make sure to include all those links in the player description. So for our listeners, you can find them down there. Darren, thank you. That was awesome learning about that and you know, getting your thoughts on what you're doing and the mission you're on. So thank you for joining me.
Yeah, thanks. Thanks, Dustin. Thanks a lot.
Thanks for listening to this episode of People at Work. If you enjoyed the podcast, can you please head on over to Apple Podcasts to leave us a 5-star review? It helps feed the Apple algorithm so more people discover our podcast. And if you haven't hit subscribe yet, you can head on over to Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher, wherever you get your podcasts, and just hit subscribe. Until next time.